Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and my co-host, Andrew, my son, on the phone, Newman.
Afternoon.
Hello, Drew. And
hello,
in the
Joe.
Booth, we have Big Joe manning all the buttons.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. We broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5, and if you can't listen while we're broadcasting and streaming live, all the shows are archived on the website. So if you'd like to chat with us while we're on the air today, we'd love to take your calls. Andrew will move over and make room on the line, and the number you can call us, what's the number you dialed in, Drew?
It's 718-497-2128.
They won't get a busy signal, right, Joe?
Nope. Joe's not talking to you.
No, I'm here.
He's manning the buttons.
We got a line open.
Okay, good. So call us, or you can email info@heritagenetwork.com and let us know what you're thinking. Today's show is car buying tips. And the reason I picked this subject is because I recently had to make a decision to buy a new car or keep my old car. And I decided to keep my old car. And the only reason I decided to keep my old car is because I hate buying a new car. And I think it's a pretty prevalent feeling throughout America. I know that Andrew hasn't had the honor, nor Joe has had the honor of actually going to buy a car, right, guys? No.
I have never owned a car, thankfully.
Never had to buy a car or own a car. Well, one day it may come up, and you will understand the pain that you have to go through because the process is so, it's so disgusting.
Why is that?
Well, I'm going to tell you why. The car salesman and the car dealers play games. They make money when they sell you a car on commission, and the higher the price, the bigger their commission. Now, you got to know that most car salesmen are, you have a stereotype car salesman, right? A slick guy, you know, fast talker.
Wearing, just in the movies.
It's the stereotypes often have a lot of truth to them. And in this case, that is the case. Car salesman is a slickster, and they haven't really grown up to say, oh, one day I want to be a car salesman. This is not a career choice for a lot of people. They get there by default because it's the last stop on the train, you know. They can't find other jobs. Okay, so I read a very interesting article about a writer who was hired by Edmunds.com. And Edmunds is a website that helps people figure out how much cars really cost and how to go about buying cars. He's on the internet. And he was hired to go undercover and be a car salesman. He had 3 months. They wanted him to work at two different car dealerships and learn the process completely and write from the inside and come back and give us a nice juicy story. Well, he did that. And the first thing is he had to go and get hired. And he had zero car selling experience. He had very little selling experience at all. But he went about and he went and applied for a job at a high-profile, big car dealer. And he eventually got the job. It was a bit of a process. They had to take a big test. They wanted to test his personality. The fact that he had no sales experience and certainly no car experience didn't matter. He was hired because he fit the personality type of a car salesman. You know, you have to be confident and aggressive and other things. So he managed to do that. The thing he talked about, besides going through this personality test, he talked about how they keep you waiting, even as an applicant. And one of the things that when you go buy a car, they constantly, you've seen it on TV, They said, I had to go talk to my manager. And they leave you sitting there for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. Well, they do the same thing when they're hiring you. And the reason this is important, because salespeople feel they are controlling the customer when the customer is sitting there waiting for the salesman to come back. And so he felt... He felt that they were just behaving just like salesmen even during the hiring process. So he went to the high pressure sales car dealership, and he was trained. And first of all, they didn't really tell you how you're going to get paid until they actually hired you, which is very similar to the way they treat you if you go in and ask how much is the car. They never really give you an answer. They're very vague, and they don't really come up with an answer, and it's a whole process before you get any numbers out of them. Well, they treated him the same way, and he finds out when he was hired that he is not at all anything but a straight commission salesman. You don't sell the car, you don't get paid. You sell the car, you get paid. And they have a big staff. They'll hire almost anybody because it doesn't cost them anything to hire people. If they don't sell a car, they don't get paid. So this personality test, the fact that he didn't have any experience selling and background in cars, doesn't matter, because if he doesn't sell a car, they don't care. You don't get paid. But anyway, so he went through the training program, and he sat in the class for, I think, about a week or so. And he learned, this is what I think is the most important thing I learned today when I was studying this case, this article. There is a process called the four-square worksheet, and this is where you have to understand what they're doing so you don't get robbed, raped, and ripped off. They get the four-square worksheet is a salesman tool for getting the maximum gross profit. The sheet is divided into four sections, and when you have a potential customer, you put them in the box, which means get them into that cubicle, out of the lot. First, you give them a test drive. Try to get them to a test drive a car, because once a customer goes behind the wheel, he's going to be very excited about buying the car, because he likes to feel the car, and the reason why he's there, he wants to drive a brand new car. So if you get him to test drive, that's number one. And number two, get him out of the car and get him into that cubicle, so then you can start with the process. And believe me, it's a process. Buying a car could take 3 to 5 hours, and that's typical. I mean, it's just so bad. Okay, so they get this four square worksheet. And they start to work. They get the information about the customer at the top. They figure out, they write down the make and the model and the serial number of the car they want to buy. Then the salesman writes the sticker price of the car in large numbers in the one square of the worksheet. And the price is always written in large, clear numbers to give it a feeling of authority. So he said, then said, plus, you always write plus fees, because you got to leave yourself open for the additionals, you know, the license fees and the sales tax and things like that. So then the salesman turns around and says, okay, how much do you want to pay for the car? And of course, it's never the number that they have written on the invoice price, on the windshield, the sticker. And they start, why? Because, well, yeah. You know, I don't know why. You know, as a matter of fact, Saturn years ago decided to do away with this process, and people were delighted to have to go into a car dealership and say, this is the sticker price, this is what you pay. But unfortunately, Saturn went out of business. So actually, the process, or else, I think the auto dealers are so entrenched in this crazy system that that they just continued the sticker.
It always open the sticker on the window.
The sticker is the starting point. Okay.
That's the starting point.
You could go down. Of course, the sticker, if you're real dope, you pay sticker price, and then you add on all the options and you pay more. And there are people who do that, by the way. And, of course, the salesmen love those people. But most Americans are a little brighter than that. They don't go and pay sticker price. And then the other three boxes on this four square are for the trade-in, if they're going to do a trade-in, and the amount of the customer's down payment and the amount of the customer's monthly payment. And you fill in the box. How much do you think your trade-in is worth? You say $6,000. How much do you want your monthly payment to be? You say $300. And then how much do you have for down payment? You say $2,500. So then every time you put a number down, say it's down payment, they say $2,500. They say up to. And then you'll say, well, I'm willing to go up to $3,000. All of a sudden, you jumped your number $500, which is a big jump. The same thing with the monthly payment. I'm willing to pay $300 a month. And they say up to is one of the classic moves that they use. Up to, and then you go up to $350. Now you jump $50 a month on your payment. And the same thing with the trade-in. I want to get $6,000. Well, what's your lowest price? Well, I'll go to $5,000. Now you drop to $5,000. So now you've given them a lot of money back, okay? Then they come back and they counteroffer, and they never drop it by big money. If suppose the car is $29,740. By the way, they don't use round numbers. They never use round numbers. They'll use odd numbers. $29,740, and you want to pay $25,000. They'll drop it to $28,980, and you got to go up $2,000 or $3,000. They go down a couple of dollars. You come up all the way. If you say you're trading, you're willing to go down to $5,000. You started at $6,000. You're willing to go to $5,000. They might offer you $2,950. I mean, they're not even close. And so so you get disgusted. And then you sit there and say, well, I wanted $6,000. I'm willing to go to $5,000. You're offering me $2,900. Then they call up and they say, well, the last time we took a Taurus, we only got $1,300 for it. You want $6,000. You want $5,000. The car's not worth it. You know, and they play this game. And then you keep getting diminished. Your numbers get diminished until you get closer to them, or you don't get anywhere. You don't make any progress with them. So they do this game with you and they wear you down. And the more you want that car, the more you're willing to give in and not fight them. They want those kind of customers. They don't want knowledgeable customers. They want people who don't really understand how the process works and how much the car really costs. So in the end, this guy did this high pressure dealership and then he quit. Because that was his thing. He only wanted to be there a month. He sold a couple of cars. He didn't like treating people that way. He went then to another dealership where it was a lot less pressure. It was a smaller dealership on a side, not on a big auto mall kind of a concept. It was just on a main street. And he had a better feeling there. He treated people with a little more dignity. But he had to do a lot of cold calling. People had bought cars from them previously. He called them up to see if they were looking to trade their cars in to buy another car. And he had to play a different kind of game with them. The pressure wasn't so bad when the customer came on the lot. But they didn't have as many customers come on their lot as the auto mall, high pressure kind of place. The guy really learned a lot. And what he came up with was, there is a lot of information on the internet for people to buy cars before you step on a lot. And he strongly recommends that you use the internet to come up with the invoice price. Car dealerships hate the people who come in with an internet price. Lots of cars are being sold right off the lot without even being sold through dealers. They call up, they do their whole deal over the phone with the internet manager, and they never even step a foot, and the salesmen are losing sales all the time. They're getting disgusted with this process, but I think this is the way the whole car sales is eventually going to go. Eventually, there will no longer be a need for car salesmen. Hallelujah. I can't wait till the last car salesman retires, because it's a disgusting process. The next thing that you could use besides the internet is there are professional negotiators out there that help you negotiate the best price on a car. And well, what you do is you hire this guy, and he knows the ins and outs about all the fees and how because most of these people used to work in car dealers. So they know how the process works. They know where they can save you money. You hire them and you pay them a percentage of what you saved. So suppose you want to buy a car for $30,000 and he gets it for $25,000. His fee may be 20% or something. So the fact that he saved you $5,000, you'll give him 20% and you're still ahead of the game. They don't work where the commission is paid by the car dealer, because that would be a conflict. So they work. What's that?
Why would you ever do that?
Well, I mean, these guys are honorable. They work for the customer. They do not work for the car dealers. And they have a relationship with lots of car dealers because these car dealers know that this guy might come back again with another customer and buy another car. So they deal with them in a different way that they would deal with, say, you or me, who only come in and buy a car once every few years. So that's out there. It's growing, and it may be worth it for people who don't know how to negotiate on their own. So, it's a really awful process. After going through this today, I'm like, well, maybe I can have the courage. By the way, my daughter, your sister, bought a car through an internet service and went and picked up a car and felt very good about how she went through the process. And she didn't get sick by, you know, being abused by the car salesman. So it is working, and I think that's the trend, and these car dealerships may be a 20th century concept and maybe out in the 21st century. All right, let's take a break for a minute, and we'll come back and talk about a couple more items I have on my plan, okay?
Every August for the past 10 years, Heritage Foods USA has had the great honor of announcing the arrival of a new generation of Good Shepherd Ranch heritage turkeys and a new chapter in the history of an endangered species. You have to eat them to save them. While many farmers now use the term, Frank Reese and his team raised the truest example of the original heritage turkey. According to the USDA, they remain the only farm allowed to use the name Heritage on their label. We hope you reserve your healthy, naturally mating, flying, standard bronze, bourbon red, white Holland, slate, black, or Narragansett turkey today. Let's do it again and support the brightest hope for the turkey. We guarantee these are the best tasting turkeys ever, or your money back. Prices start at $75. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. I can't believe it's turkey time. Well, a couple more months. We're going to have a big bash this Sunday. The Heritage Radio Network is having its first fundraiser. I look forward to eating and drinking with my compadres. Andrew won't be there, but Joe in the booth will be there, and we're gonna have lots of fun. Too bad you're missing this one, Drew.
That's all right. I have a bigger plan.
You have a bigger plan?
I got a hot day with two young ladies.
Yes, his niece is in Florida. That's cool. Well, you know, school started this week for the rest of the kids in New York City. And I found unusual scholarships I wanted to share with our listeners, because somebody may be in to get some money if they can qualify for these are a little weird, but they're real. And so the first one I found was the National Marbles Tournament Scholarship. If you're between 8 and 14, you can win between $1,000 and $2,000 in scholarship money for being a good marble player.
Who?
Marbles. Anybody who can play marbles can be eligible. Marbles. Can be eligible for make some money. There's a scholarship from the Tall Club, $1,000 for men who are over 6'2" or women over 5'10". That doesn't seem hard to get, right? You either qualify or you don't, right? The Culinary Institute of America's All-American Apple Pie Recipe gives $25,000 to first place. That's pretty good. That's pretty good, right? The Sheep's Association, Make It With Wool, offers $2,000 for contestants who make their best attempt at a wool-only garment of clothing.
Okay.
Yeah. Starfleet Academy Scholarship. This is weird. If you are part of any organization modeled around Star Trek, you can earn a $500 scholarship to any post-high school institution.
I love Star Trek.
You love Star Trek?
Yeah, I watch it every night.
I can't believe you do. I don't believe you at all.
Why would I lie about that?
I don't know. I knew you growing up. I never saw you watch Star Trek.
Well, it's streamed on Netflix, and I watch it every night, at least an episode or two.
Really? Well,
yeah, they have 7 seasons. You know they did like 25 episodes a season? That's a lot of damn Star Trek.
Yes, the shows used to be on for 6 months. That's right.
Which series are you watching?
Every show's on for like 2 weeks.
He's talking about Star Trek. Yeah, they changed.
Which one, though, Andrew? Next Generation? Like, which one are you watching?
What?
Which Star Trek are you watching?
Next Generation.
That's what I thought.
I don't even know about it. I didn't watch Star Trek when it was on the first time around.
Patrick Stewart? Ah, come on.
I didn't watch it.
Luke Picard.
All right.
I don't know.
I didn't watch it.
You should.
It's okay. Here's another one. Grandpa's Gone Wired. Contestants can get $500 if they take a video or pictures of them introducing their grandparents into the digital age. That doesn't seem hard to do, right?
Well, is it like just like have them on there for like 6 months or something, or is it like just taking a picture of it?
You have to teach your grandparents how to do something digitally, I think.
Like, because you tried that with your mother, and look how long that lasted.
Yeah, that didn't work. But, you know, my mother is a lot older. See, I'm a grandma now, and I can learn something digitally a lot easier, right?
Yeah, but your grandchildren aren't teaching you. They're 6 months old.
All right. Well, I'm just saying. Okay, well, they might be the right grandparent and grandchild out there that can qualify for this. And then we got duct tape stuck on prom contest. $3,000 in scholarship money to the couple with the best duct tape outfits for a prom.
That doesn't seem like a good idea.
Well, I think that's a pretty good idea. For $3,000, I know a lot of kids that might be interested in that. Come on. Be a little creative. Get some duct tape.
Then you got to spend a lot of money on duct tape. So how much money are you really winning?
Yeah, well, maybe you'll spend $30 on duct tape and make $3,000.
I think it would cost more than $30. Roll of duct tape's actually pretty expensive.
Well, it goes pretty far. It's pretty thick. All right, then we got a duck calling contest. High school seniors can win $1,500 if they have any skill in duck calling. Then there's the American Nudist Research Library Scholarship.
I don't want to know about that.
$1,000 scholarship to a high school senior or recent grad with at least 3 years of membership in a nudist organization. I told you these were weird.
That sounds illegal.
Well, nudism, is that the right word? Is not illegal, Drew. It's uncomfortable for a lot of people, but it's not illegal.
No, but like older people looking at younger people should be illegal. I think that's illegal. That's like child pornography.
Well. And all you have to do is have 3 years of membership in a nudist organization.
Three years! When you graduate college, it'll make you illegal.
Well, who says that?
As old as 15. Well, and it's illegal to look at naked 15-year-olds.
Maybe the nudist organization is age appropriate. They have a nudist section for 15-year-olds and different ones for 50-year-olds.
Well, I hope it's your older people.
Here's the last one.
Highly illegal.
Here's the last one.
You're disgusting right now, Joanne. You're disgusting with your perverted ideas.
And here's the last one. Skateboarding scholarship. Any skateboarder who plans to attend a 2 or 4 year college can apply and get up to $5,000 in scholarship money. Come on, this is pretty easy stuff.
Wait, who are you applying for these scholarships for skateboarding? I don't care about the nudist crap because I don't endorse that shit.
You're still stuck on that.
Huh?
You're still stuck on the nudists. Get over it.
That's illegal.
All right, Drew, I said maybe they have appropriate ones. Those who are 15-year-olds, those who are 50-year-olds are in separate clubs.
I'm a little disgusted with you right now.
Oh, my God. Well, that's the end of my unusual scholarships. Now I have a bit of good news. This is going to make a lot of small business people and freelancers happy. The New York State, what is it called? New York State Appeals? Let me think where it says. New York State Appeals Court has determined that the commuter tax is unconstitutional.
The MTA tax?
Yes. So that's been in effect for a couple of years. I think it started November 2010, or 2009, actually 2009. And Nassau County fought hard, I should say, against it because it came about, if any of you remember, when the MTA couldn't balance their budget. They had a huge budget shortfall, as usual. And they implemented this tax imposed on every employer who had an employee. So the employees didn't pay it, the employers paid it. And it was a tax to go to the MTA. to subsidize for public transportation. Long Island really, really got angry about it because, you know, their public transportation is pretty minimal out there. They got the Long Island Railroad and the rest of it's really low. You know, it's not like they have a 24-hour subway system like we have in New York City and buses, you know, up, running up and down every avenue. So they really fought hard. The employers fought really hard. And
answer your question.
Yeah.
Where do most of the people who live in Nassau County go to work?
I would think they live all over. But the point is...
Where would they go to work?
The people, the employers paid it, okay? The employers. So if you own a shop out in Long Island, chances are most of your employees do not take public transportation to go
so
to the shop.
So the people who purchase things at your stores work in the city.
Sometimes.
So suburbs are reaping the rewards of a major metropolis being there and the infrastructure that the major metropolis puts into place. For you to have suburb people living there, you should be supporting that. You wouldn't have a little town in Nassau County.
I think it's outrageous. I think, watch this, watch this.
You know what, shut down the Long Island Railroad. Shut down the Queens. Like, yeah, you can't come in.
No. I say if you want to tax...
Charge and triple on the commuter passes.
If you want to...
There we go.
If you want to...
Are you on speakerphone?
If you want to tax the people who use the subways or the Long Island Railroad, that's one thing. But it's not fair to tax the employers just because they have employees. To tax the employers for the people who...
But no one would live there if... All right, fine. What if they raise the Long Island Railroad prices? Just triple the Long Island Railroad prices.
Listen to me.
They don't have to worry about the infrastructure for Long Island anymore. That cuts down the overall cost for the MTA. And then what? So no one lives in Nassau County anymore. Is that really what you want to do?
No, I think that, first of all, I think that this tax was outrageous, that the MTA should learn how to balance their own budget and live within their own means and, you know, stop wasting our money. They waste our money. That's number one. Number two,
government's a waste of money.
Well, we know that. However, how are we going to do, we can't privatize the Long Island Railroad and the New York City subway system. We can't privatize that.
Okay.
So
what do you want
to
do?
We have to live with some government programs, Drew. But we have to make them accountable. The MTA is not accountable for the money that they spend. They are not accountable. They are lazy sloths, okay? They have
that's why you work for the government.
Well, you know, they're a quasi-government kind of an agency. And they have been put their feet to the fire a million times, and then nothing ever comes of it. They get in trouble. They're told to cut their budgets. They're told to start being more productive. However, nothing ever changes. It's just outrageous. And then they come along and they impose this tax. It's a tax. A tax imposed by a quasi-government organization. No. Only the government has the right to impose tax.
They didn't impose the tax.
Yes, they did. No. It was the MTA, used exclusively for the MTA.
The tax is used exclusively for the MTA.
Yes.
But the money was put into place by the state. It's not like the MTA was like, yo, we're taxing people now. That can't happen.
They effectively
the state is the one
did
who put the tax into place. Come on now.
They effectively
don't give
did that.
Information.
Nope. They effectively did that. And
you
know what?
The MTA didn't say we need a tax. Fine, then raise the fares.
No.
Keep raising the fares.
You know, frankly, I don't agree with you one bit, especially the people in the suburbs.
Improve accountability across the board into all government sectors. Go ahead. Do that.
Well,
how do you do it, Joe?
Well, it's impossible because these people are getting away with
so
murder.
So what do you want to do?
What do I want to do? I don't
know. You want to shut down the MTA then?
No, we can't shut down. But
I'm
glad that the Court of Appeals decided that it was unconstitutional. Of course.
What's your solution?
I don't have a solution. I think they should be more accountable. Fire them and get somebody who's more productive. You know, look what happened with FedEx and UPS. They virtually put the post office out of business, okay? Because, you know, they said, we're going to give the post office all these opportunities to be accountable and be productive and act like a business. And they never did. Before you know it, the post office is going to be in a concept where you say, remember when we used to have a post office? It's not going to be around for the rest of your lifetime. It's going to be gone. The same thing with this transit authority.
If they run the post office?
The post office is going to go away. It's just going to go away. You're going to wind up having FedEx and UPS taking care of your mail. I really believe that. Or some other private institution is going to pick up the letters and do the mail in another form other than what we know is the post office. If they don't start being accountable and being productive and doing what they're supposed to do like a real business.
No way. I don't believe it.
Well, then, that you know,
if we've been talking about accountability, then there's many more sectors that are much more inefficient.
Of course.
And the post office, and the MTA.
Those are,
like, if we're going to start cutting the essential things like that, cut the things that are unessential, non-essential, that's the word. Cut the things that are non-essential. And then come to the MTA and come to the post office, which are used by everyday people. These are things that are used by everyday people.
Well, it doesn't.
There are tons of programs out there that are not used by everyday people that you should not look at cutting.
Hold on a second.
And look at cutting other programs.
Hold on a second. They happen to be very large budgets. You can't just say just because a lot of people use them and we'll cut the more obscure ones. That's not okay. You got to cut the ones that are abusing, hemorrhaging, and bleeding.
I use the post office and I use the MTA. Limited source government entities that
so
I
make them accountable.
Other than that, I don't care about any of this government.
Well, just
now when I want to cut the MTA, I'm like, screw this. Cut the defense. Cut Social Security. Cut Medicare. Why can't I say that then?
You can say whatever you want.
Why
you
can
say
cut government
grants.
Cut government funding for a lot of small businesses. Because you know what? The people who run the small businesses don't even know what they're doing in the first place. Cut a lot of other things.
You know, Drew, I'm going
to... If you want to talk about just arbitrarily cutting things and calling for accountability. Like, honestly...
True. They putting themselves out of business. That's all I'm saying.
MTA is not going anywhere.
Oh, well.
The MTA is not going anywhere.
They may be taking over one day. Okay, listen, it's 5 o'clock. We're going to say goodbye. I want to thank you for joining me on the phone today. And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.